need a flat to dawn with plenty of tailing fish.
And the perfect fly rod.
Yeah!
And get ready for some magic.
What an awesome eat! And I got one! Oh, damn, I got him! You got it! I got him!
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.
And with the sound of that beer pour, you know it's Monday evening. Good Monday evening, everybody. I am your host of the Monday Night Kickoff Show here on Kayak Fishing Radio Network. I am Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. I've got some really cool guests lined up for this evening. I'm going to start off with Captain Pat from Kayak Fishing Classics. It's a tournament series that is pretty prevalent over in the west coast of Florida. I think there's five events that he has set up there now, and he's going to be bringing those same events over here to the east coast. So it should be really cool, but we'll get more into that as soon as I get him here on the line. The weekend, well, as most of you know who aren't in the area or are in the area, we're being bombarded with a ton of rainfall from Tropical Storm, Tropical Depression, Debbie Downer, as it may be, because she's going to be sitting with us for quite a while. She doesn't want to leave, apparently. So, looks like we're going to get some rain through the weekend. It could stay with us all the way through the weekend, which is kind of crazy. But when the rain falls, man, the fish bite. So, you know, get out there if you get a chance. Other than that, this past weekend, we also said, my wife and I said goodbye to a good friend of mine, Dalton, and as he went to fish upstairs with the man up there and, you know, start looking for good fishing holes for us for the chance that we get to be together in the future. But anyhow, we miss you, buddy. Thinking of you. So, what else is going on? Oh man, big announcement! The kayak canoe inshore fishing tournament to benefit the Help Keep Emily in School Fund. Emily is the daughter of a friend of ours, Austin Rose or Roos. I'm sorry, buddy, if I mispronounce your last name. I'm not good with names. She's a special needs child who goes to a certain school that offers her amazing class activities and teaching activities that have really helped her to progress. And they raised the tuition for that class. So she may be at risk of not being able to attend the school. And that would be a shame. I mean, we need to try and step up and do what we can for Emily and for her family. So that kayak fishing, the kayak canoe inshore fishing tournament is not only for kayak fishermen, it's also for canoers, obviously. And wade fishing is actually allowed in this tournament as well. There's not a tournament fee. However, donations are appreciated. I would expect that anybody who listens to my show or anybody who's going to be listening to the podcast would take advantage of the opportunity to donate some money to this great family and for a great cause. Don't just fish a free tournament and try and win prizes. There's a reason why we're doing this, and we're trying to raise money for the family. So let's get out there and show our support and do what we can. Yeah, there you go. So we've got, when's the dates? I'm trying to find it here. August 25th, 2012. The award ceremony and raffle will be held at Mosquito Lagoon Bait and Tackle from 1 to 4 p.m. For any of you that don't know, that's in Titusville, 20 North Washington Avenue, Titusville, Florida. For more information, if you can't make it down here and you want to donate something to the family, donate a little bit of money to them and help them out, they're accepting donations on their website. It's www.helpemily.com. EMILY now help.emilynow.org, help.emilynow.org. So, you know, appreciate if you guys would just at least go and check out the website. When you read her story, man, you're going to feel obligated. It's just, she's such a beautiful young lady, and the family really can use our help. So there you go. Also, we just had a great time the other night supporting Castaway Against Cancer, which is the Swamp Brothers from Discovery Channel. It's their cancer foundation that they've put together in memory of their mom. So it should be pretty awesome. It should be pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome. What in the world am I saying? And I didn't even drink anything there, so there you go. But we had a pretty good turnout, I think. I don't know exactly what I don't know exactly how many people were there. There was quite a few. Our very own Mr. Hammerhead, Greg Crist, who's in the chat room, he was there. That was awesome to see him. We did some raffles. There was some 50-50 drawings. We threw out some T-shirts and stuff. We sold some Tito's vodka. We sold a bottle of Tito's that was signed by Robbie from the Swamp Brothers to a guy for $120 for charity. That was pretty awesome. The group raised about $2,500, I think Steve just said. Sweet. That's pretty good, I think. Yeah, awesome. But what we did is Tito's Handmade Vodka, which is made in Texas, was kind enough to donate cases and cases of vodka so that people could purchase the drinks, and all the proceeds from those drinks were going to the fund. So kudos to those guys. Also, FYI, any of you guys listening who are thinking about going to the Boondoggle, if you're not familiar with what a boondoggle is, please allow my friend Mr. Steve Chapman to tell you all about the boondoggle.
Boondoggle. Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
There you go. Tito's Handmade Vodka has stepped up and said that they would be the what they were going to be was going to be the unofficial vodka of the Boondoggle, which is funny that I would even pursue a liquor company to get involved at all. But, well, we're fishermen, and, well, most of us drink while we're not fishing. So it's pretty cool. I talked to a representative from Tito's at the bar, and he has agreed to step up and become the official vodka of the Boondoggle. So that should be awesome. Can't wait for that. Those guys are going to take good care of us, and it should be awesome. So let's see, what else? Man, so many things to talk about. I got Steve Chapman's in the chat room there, guys. Any of you guys who are in the chat room, Steve is from Fishing Florida Radio, along with Boudreaux and Captain Mike Ortigo. If you guys are not fans or don't listen to Fishing Florida Radio, you should. It's one of the most entertaining shows I think I've ever heard on the radio, but just because the guys are a little quirky. And if you don't know what I mean by that, if you guys are friends with me on Facebook, you can look at some of the pictures from the event this past weekend and look at the various poses that Steve has when he's in his pictures, and then also Boudreaux dressed up like a chick, which is a little scary. But, yeah, so there you go. Those guys are going to be over in Abaco, at the Abaco Lodge, I believe, fishing for bonefish next week or this week. So good luck, buddy. And later on this evening, I'll have a guest on from Nassau in the Bahamas, Mike the Bonefish Junkie. So that'd be cool. But Steve says he hasn't been able to sleep since he saw Boudreaux dress in drag. Well, the sad thing is Boudreaux is actually a better looking chick than he is a dude. So yeah, that's pretty bad. But anyway, fishing, since this is a fishing show, what would I talk about fishing in this awesome weather. Well, ditch fishing is going to be on fire because the water's going to be moving. And then also to the culverts and the canal systems, fishing just outside the culverts and the canal systems will be good. All up and down the coast, on the east coast and on the west coast, I would imagine. If you can find some moving water, you're going to find some fish activity. If you have a lot of freshwater runoff, you might not find certain species hanging around that runoff. Like you might not find too many snook, or you might not find too many redfish hanging around that real low salinity water. But you should have no problem whatsoever finding some tarpon. So look for that. That'll be awesome. You can get those guys on fly when the water's moving like that. They'll eat a fly pretty regularly. And then also, too, they'll take a jerk shad or even a live finger mullet or something like that. It should be good. But anyhow, so without further ado, I'm going to welcome my longtime sidekick, a guy I consider to be one of my best friends, Mr. Rob of Badcast DeVore. How are you, brother?
Hey, Chuck. I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, man, there's I don't know about you guys over there on the East Coast, but over here, Clearwater got the Debbie Downer syndrome. Clearwater received was the proud recipient of 10.5 inches of rain yesterday.
Yeah, don't know how many inches we've gotten yet, but it's been raining almost nonstop for a couple of days now.
It's flooded all over the place. My fishing buddy Keith, he couldn't go to work today because his street was flooded. He lives kind of in close proximity to Lake Tarpon, and the water was like literally all the way up to his house. And the street had about 2 feet of water in it. And he was out there, screwing around, and he said he saw about a 2-foot bass, about an 18-inch bass swimming around in the grass. I'm like, dude, you should have threw like a mirrodine at it or something, You might have ate it.
That's awesome. Hey, real quick, dude, tell us about what you got going on with filming.
Well, I received an email the other day from none other than the Real Paddling Film Festival. And apparently somebody recommended me to them, and they asked me if I'm interested in submitting a movie for 2013, that the deadline is August 30th or somewhere at the end of August. So I got to get my tail in gear, and I'll be happy to try to submit something that's good enough for that festival, man.
That's awesome, man. Well, that just goes to show you, man, that people out there do appreciate the hard work you put into doing your videos.
Thanks, man. I try. I just love to do it. So that's the fun part, man, for me. It's fun for me.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, listen, I got to run. My guest is calling in, and I know you got to go do some shopping, but hit me up after the show.
All right. Have a good show, man.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
See you.
All right, that's Rob, a bad podcast DeVore. From Rob, we go to Captain Pat. Captain Pat, how are you, buddy?
Okay, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic in this lovely weather that we're experiencing here in the not-so-sunny, sunny Florida.
Oh, man, yeah, it's rainy like crazy over here, too.
Yeah, well, listen, for those that are listening that aren't familiar with your tournament series that you run over there on the West Coast, why don't you fill us in on how and when that all got started, and we'll kind of go into where it's going to evolve to.
Okay, sure thing. It was about 3 years ago now, and I decided I wanted to do a kayak tournament series, and so I started it up and learned an awful lot the first year, made mistakes on small scale, and then expanded each year, and we grew in our sponsorship. We award sponsor products, gear products that are related to kayak fishing as opposed to cash. And that's working real good. And each year we grow it and expand it. And it's been getting more and more popular each series year. We have 10 open tournaments beginning in January. We have one each month. And then at the conclusion of the 10th month in October and the 10th tournament, a series champion is determined by points or total inches. And then we have an Invitational National Championship in November, and that is where everybody's slate is wiped clean. No one has any points, and it's just an Invitational tournament of the top anglers from the series. And we're off in December, and we start up again in January.
Sweet, sweet. And, you know, it's interesting because me and you have talked off the air and before about kind of where your tournaments have come from and where you're looking to go with them and stuff. And I'm super excited about it, man. It's been too long, I think, over here on the East Coast for us not to have had some sort of a tournament trail, kind of, in kayak fishing. I'm not going to include the IFA into that category because, I mean, there's only three events that we can fish here, and most of us that fish the East Coast can't make it to most of those events. So, but it's been a long time coming, man, and I'm glad to see that with the following that you already have over on the West Coast, and after talking to our buddy Jose or Pepe from his experience with the tournament, everything was a class act, and the prizes were incredible. Your sponsors are amazing, and you know what's your thoughts of bringing the tournament over here to the East Coast? What kind of, you know, I know that's where you're taking it. What kind of led you to want to do that? Just to expand, or did you see the need for the tournaments over here?
Well, to begin with, we're really excited to be coming over there. We saw the need, just like a lot of people have. We have the ability to try and fulfill that or satisfy it. We love the sport as much as everyone else does, and we decided it was time. Another point of interest in it is that we knew 2 years ago that 10 tournaments on one side was a bit too much for someone to fish every tournament once a month. It's quite a commitment. And the guys that do that, there's usually two or three or sometimes five that can hit every tournament or almost every tournament. Of course, they're going to rise to the top of the leaderboard just through sheer numbers, being there and catching fish. And the other guys who are equally as talented that can only fish maybe three, four, or five tournaments, they don't fare as well because of the numerical attrition, if you will. So in our decision that it was time to go over to the East Coast and start a series over there, we split the tournaments, and the Gulf Series will have five tournaments beginning in 2013, and the East Coast Series will have five tournaments. At the end of the fifth tournament, a series champion will be determined in each division, Gulf and East, and then we'll have one national championship where we invite the top anglers from both of the series, the East and Gulf Coast Series. We felt that having five tournaments versus 10 is going to make it a lot more competitive because a lot more people are going to be able to fish five tournaments stretched out over a 10-month period of time. Whereas they had one a month, they'll have one every other month with us on the west side and then one every other month on the east side.
Right, that's awesome, man. And one of the things that I really like personally about your setup is the online captain's meeting. I think that's unique. I've never heard of it before, and I think that it's really unique to the tournament series is that I've heard of. It makes it a lot easier to fish the different tournaments in the different locations because when you're not required, have to be in town until the next day, it keeps the cost down, obviously, for the angler. They don't have to worry about a hotel room or don't have to really worry about, you know, taking extra time off of work or whatever the case may be to try and make it all happen. So that's really cool, man. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, much for the same reasons that you just voiced, Chuck. We used to hold physical captains' meetings. I helped a friend start up a boat tournament series and then went back to setting up the kayak fishing classics. And I noticed, you know, the boating and the kayaking are two different animals completely. The people that fish in the tournaments are all great anglers, but the captain's meeting was more of a party than it was a meeting, or they'd have a short meeting and then a party, which is all fine. But it was a problem for the kayakers, as just about everybody works. And then if their tournament is real far away from where they work, it was impossible for them to make it. Or if they could make it, take a day off, burn up a vacation day on Friday, and have to have a hotel Friday night to make just to make the meeting, when they could be getting some shut-eye and hit some pre-fishing on Friday and hit the tournament on Saturday. So I looked for a solution, and I looked at video camcorders, high-def, all-digital, and got a good deal on a couple of them and started filming the captain's meetings with that in mind, keeping it helping keep our sport economical and more competitive, and just pushed it forward from there. It's been working out real good. The guys like it, and we've been trying to get better at doing the captain's meeting, make them short, sweet, you know, 10 minutes maximum, and you're done.
Yeah, I like that format, man, a lot. And the fact that the tournaments are on Saturdays is pretty nice, too, because I'm not big into blowing my entire weekend on trying to go and fish an event. You know, when I could spend at least part of my weekend with the family. And plus, it makes it easier for most guys who are married or who have significant others that might not appreciate or really want them to fish these events to participate in them, because they're not going to be gone all weekend. So that's really cool. It's an easy way to get a kitchen pass, man, because you don't have to be obligated to leave. In fact, you can do the captain's meeting from your house and still enjoy your evening. So that's cool. I like that a lot. That's really neat. What kind of led you to want to do or get involved in the kayak fishing deal anyway? I mean, do you kayak fish yourself?
Yes, I do. At the time that I started the series up, I did not, because I could not. The doctors wouldn't allow me to because of my back. I had a real severe injury many years ago, and if I sat, as you normally sit in a kayak, about 10 minutes of that, and then I wouldn't be able to walk, literally. So I had to stay out of them, and the VA gave me some exercises that they cleared me that I could do them now, and I did them and did them and did them and built up certain muscles, and then they said you have to have a boat that holds you in this kind of a seated position, and I found one that does that, and it worked out good. So now I can stay seated in them all day long and not have a problem, which is wonderful. But what led me into it is I'm a fly fishing guide, and I just absolutely love being on the water, and I noticed that when I bring my flats boat up into some of the super shallow water in small bays and bayous, that the fish can actually feel the pressure change, the weight of the boat into the water, and it alerts them, it alarms them. Although it's dead silent, they feel something. And it just made sense that a kayak would be a stealthier, less intrusive way to get up on them for fly fishing, and be able to, you know, flip out 40 to 60 feet without a lot of backcasting and make a lot of commotion. And that was harder than what it sounded, and it led me to design a kayak fly fishing line, which our fly line sponsor, Jim Tini Fly Lines, manufactures now for us. It's just one back cast, and you're throwing 40 to 60 feet, depending on your skill level and your fishing. It works out real good.
That's awesome. Have you found a different or let me try that again. Have you found a kayak manufacturer that makes a seat that works well for you?
Yeah, I found two of them actually. Diablo Paddle Sports is our kayak sponsor, and their normal seat, a normal seat in a kayak, just will not work at all for me at all. I can't sit in them, but they have the raised Larry chair, which is like a folding chair, and I can sit in that for a couple hours, and then I've got to get out of it, and it's just not the right position for me, but it's better than a regular kayak seat. And so I started messing around with that, and the doctor said, well, that's okay for an hour, but you got to get out after an hour. And I said, God, that's not enough time. And that's our photo boat. Diablo was kind enough to give us one of their Adios boats for our photography team. And so it has all kinds of stuff on it for taking photography and shooting video, so it's kind of hard to fly fish out of it without getting tangled up on everything. Then I found a manta ray. One of the guys in the series, actually several of the guys in the series have those, and I noticed that they have quite a different seating arrangement in them, the way, the angle that you set.
Right.
I sat in one, and it was just like sitting in a lounger. And I said, wow, this is perfect. And so I snapped some pictures, showed the doctors, and they said, that's perfect. And I had to get angle shots and all that. And they said, yeah, try it out and let us know how it works. And so far, those two boats have been real good for me. So I'm back on the water fishing out of kayaks now, which I'm just loving it.
That's cool, man. And let's jump back into the tournament. What kind of or what species do you have in the West Coast divisions, and are they going to be the same species that are going to be over here on the East Coast?
We fish for tarpon, redfish, of course, snook, and trout. That's the mains that we go over here. We try and mix it up. And on the East Coast, it's probably going to be the same. It's going to be very similar, if not the same. With everyone that I've talked to, I don't know the East Coast waters as well as I do the West, obviously. But talking to you and talking to Jose Vidal and a couple of other guys, it seems like we can be on the same page per species, per series. It sounds like it would be pretty good. And looking at the places that we have in mind on the East Coast for the tournament locations, they hold the same fish, with the exception you get down to Biscayne, and you can get some permit and some bones.
Yeah, so like up here around the Mosquito Lagoon and the North Titusville area, I know it's a little tough sometimes to find tarpon and to get any snook anymore after the freeze. You'll find some. I personally know where there's a bunch of small snook. And I know where I can go to pick up some tarpon as well. But the average angler, I don't think really does. So it might be interesting to maybe even throw in something crazy like black drum. That would be cool.
Yeah, we're not going to rule that out, certainly. You know, it's going to be the same for everybody on the East Coast, whatever the fish are. It really doesn't matter what the guys on the West Coast can catch.
Right.
You know, everybody will be fishing for the same species on the East Coast. And from tournament to tournament, we mix up the species. Obviously, when you get way up north, you're not going to get too many snook, for example. And you have to be in the right place at the right time of year for the tarpon migration. So we don't put all four species up on the target for each tournament. We mix it up, and we're certainly going to listen to everybody and take suggestions to heart. And so feedback is important and much appreciated. And if it looks like black drum would be a good fish to go after and have a lot of fun with, then we'll definitely do that. One of the things that we do, and I know you've been on our site, you've seen the marine research organizations that we help support. We share data with the Moat Marine and FWC and so on, and we encourage it for everybody to do it, such as the tarpon draw scrubs and sending in the data, or you can give it to us and we'll do it for you. We're happy to do it. That data is super important, especially after the snook kill. They're trying to measure accurately what the population is like when four or five guys go out and they catch some snook or any species in one area, and they tell a couple of buddies, and by the time it gets to the FWC or the Moat Marine or whomever, the fish is a lot bigger suddenly, and there were more caught. So that's anecdotal information. It's not accurate. So with photographs and measurements and jaw scrubs, is considered scientific data, and that's what we gather in our tournaments, and we send that, the pertinent data, to those organizations to help them out, because they're data starved. So we're trying to do our part and help protect our estuaries and the species that we enjoy fishing for.
That's awesome. I do quite a bit of the jaw scrubs with the juvenile tarpon over here, and man, there's just I'm excited about the rain for that reason and that reason only, because those little juveniles that we catch over here on a regular basis, and I mean little juveniles, if you see any of my pictures, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not even thousands of them, all in these back little estuaries and creeks, and you can walk these dike roads out here in the wildlife refuge and down in the Melbourne area and in the Merritt Island area and up in New Smyrna, and you can find these areas where there's just literally hundreds of them. So that's cool, man. That's good to hear that you guys are that involved with the scientific side of things. I think that it's important for all of us to kind of get involved with that one way or another. And if you can kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, and fish an event, and also to give a little bit of back to science so that we can protect our resources, that's pretty awesome.
Well, one thing that we wanted to do additionally, in prior years, we only allowed slot size of a particular species and larger to be entered for the tournaments, the photo entries. And the FWC brought it to my attention is that, well, what about the juveniles? You know, the under slot, you guys catch gazillions of them, but you don't record any data. And it's kind of hard to ask a guy to record the data when he's tournament fishing, he's trying to win prizes, and to stop on a 12-inch redfish, for example. And so we did away with the minimums.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the guys record all of their data, and, of course, they're going to turn in their biggest fish to try and win the tournament, but we gather all that data, and that has helped them immensely. The Snook Foundation, which is now the Snook and Game Fish Foundation, they take the top five major inshore game fish species and record data off in that. So we encourage our anglers in the tournaments, and we'll do so on the East Coast, that when you're pre-fishing or just fun fishing, or if you're in a tournament, to afterwards log in and record your data with them as well, because that's extremely helpful. You know, all these different marine research organizations pool all their information together, and they really get some great scientific data, and it also helps folks like the Snook and Gamefish Foundation on the political side to use that data to go to bat for all the anglers statewide to help protect our fishing sports in general.
Yeah, man. It's and actually, what's really cool too is that there's a the Snook Foundation actually has a little like a card that you can get from them if you contact them that you can use a dry erase marker on, and you can record a lot of the data that they're looking for. I think on also redfish, trout, snook, bonefish, permit, and tarpon. I'm pretty sure the ones that they have listed on that
That's
card.
Right.
Yeah, and so it makes for now. You know what? To me, that just adds another little something to your day. I mean, it's very rewarding to know, and to know that you're helping out. But I also think that they'll throw you like a T-shirt or something if you do enough of them. I think there's prizes to be had through that organization, just like through the Bonefish Tarpon Trust, I think, and through Moat Marine and FWC. I think that there's you can also win things if you help to give back. So it's like a I don't know. It one hand helps the other. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a fun way to kind of keep track of your own catches, and a cool way to kind of help out the scientific community. Because face it, without them, and the way things are going right now in the fishing industry, with all the closures and seasons and things that we see that are continuously being brought upon us as fishermen, if we have good, accurate data to go to or to use against those organizations that want to try and shut down recreational fishing, then you know, we can prove that, look, we're not really we're not doing any damage to the environment. Rather, we're assisting in gathering the data that's important to track these fish. So that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it's been working. A really, really important tool. And we certainly urge everybody, you know, record your data and share it. The Foundation's Angler Action Program is a very powerful tool, and it'll definitely pay dividends for all of us in the sport, for everybody to be involved in that.
Very cool. Well, real quick, buddy, what's the what's your tournament entry fees, and how can people find out more information on the tournament circuit if they want to try and get involved and fish these things?
Sure. Our entry fee is always $40 for any of our tournaments, and you simply get on our website, which is the kayakfishingclassics.com, and you'll see up there at towards the top on the menu bar, it's left aligned, where you register here and you pay here. So everything's done online. We cut down paper with that way. And you register each tournament, and you'll get an official measuring tape from us that you get to stick on a board with a nose stop on it. And you'll shoot your photos that way. We will get you a fishing token that's serialized for each angler individually, and you get a new one every tournament that you enter into. And those tokens go on to the fish when you take your entry picture.
This makes it nice and simple, pretty easy, straightforward. I like it.
Yeah, real easy, real simple, real quick. And that's important. You want to get your picture, get your fish back in the water, revive it, make sure it gets away okay, and then move on to your next fish.
There you go. Awesome, man. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on the show and telling us about the events. Do you have a timeline when you're looking to maybe try and get the East Coast stuff going? Or
we're actually working on it right now. We're just zeroing in on the tournament locations. After the Pine Island Matt Lachey tournament on July 14th, then we're going to take a week over on the East Coast and go to probably 8 or 9 of the spots that we have picked out, and then finalize it to 5, and then we'll go from there. So, and then at that time, we'll put that information on our website. We'll make an East Coast series page for the tournament location, and just to start acclimating everybody to it and start answering some of the questions, because I am getting inundated with questions, and our staff is getting pounded for questions. When are you going to start? Where are you going to fish? What are you going to fish for? So everybody's getting excited, and we really appreciate it. And all of us here really appreciate you having us on your show. You guys have a great show, and we enjoy listening to it.
No, absolutely. Anytime. And listen, as we get closer to finalizing dates and stuff like that for over here, please feel free, man. Anytime at all, call. But if you want to come on the show and plug each individual event, I'm totally cool with it, man. It's good. Like Pepe just said in the chat room, it's going to be awesome, and it is, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's something that we've definitely needed over here for a long time. No, thank you. It's something that we've needed over here for a very long time, and I'm glad to see that somebody's finally stepped up and is gonna put on a good show. So, good deal, man. That's awesome. We're super excited about it. But listen, feel free to hang on the line if you want. If you want to still be active in the show, that's cool too. I've got another gentleman calling here shortly from the Bahamas. We'll kind of hear from him. I spoke with he is Mike, the Bonefish Junkie, and he's on Facebook, and he's got his own blog. He's got a couple of websites and stuff going. He's got a lot of things going on, and really interesting. Yeah, really interesting dude. He's an American who's sold a business here and packed up. Him and his wife have packed up, and moved over to Nassau in the Bahamas. So living the dream, so to speak, and chasing after gray ghosts and all kinds of fun stuff over there. So it should be interesting. And he's actually interested in kayak fishing over there, which is one of the reasons why I wanted him to call the show, because there seems to be a need, so to speak, for the lodges and things to kind of get involved with kayaking. You know, with the economy going in a downward spiral, it's hitting everybody, including the lodges over in the Bahamas and the resorts and stuff. Okay. So it could definitely make for a pretty cool alternative than to go over there, spend all the money to stay in a nice place, and then have to hire a local guide. Some of these places are doing like kind of do-it-yourself type charters, where like they kind of give you an idea of where you should go walking, and you go walk out on the freaking flat and go look for bonefish. This would just give you another avenue to do that. But cool.
And a neat thing about the classics, when a guy has his favorite fishing place, and he goes and he fishes there, he or she, and they fish the same places for the same species all the time, or the same two or three places, and that's the extent of their fishing world, and they have a great time, that's fine. And I used to do that, and then I started wanting to learn more about the species and learn more about areas. With the classics, one of the ideas of our agenda is that if you're following the series, you're going to fish in several really unique locations, unique to Florida, unique in the world, and it's right here in Florida. And so you'll be challenged because you've not fished those areas before and under those conditions for that species. So you'll have to learn your species. You have to learn water flow. You have to know what tides do and what baits are present, when, where, and why. So your fishing knowledge will go up greatly. We've had several guys come up to all of us here, Chuck, that said, wow, this is a lot harder than what we thought, and we've really learned an awful lot, and there are better anglers for it. They can go anywhere now and catch fish, and it's really cool to see them do that.
Yeah, it's, you know what, man, I think, and it's maybe it's just me, but I think that kayak fishing as a whole makes you a better angler.
Oh, I agree.
You know, it forces you to slow down, and it's I don't know. I just, to me, it's such a great tool, and the idea of having one or two or three launch places to launch from, and you can't rely on going back home to fish, is awesome, man. And it really kind of levels the playing field.
Yeah, it sure does, and everybody's going to learn a lot, as you should. Every time you go on the water, you should learn something that you didn't know before, and grow as an angler and grow as a person. Everybody's going to meet some really good people, and I think everybody will have a good time over there.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. And what else do you have going? I mean, plug some of your sponsors real quick, some of the sponsors that you have. Plug them, feel free.
Okay. Well, something new as of last fall is that we came up with our own magazine. It's called the Kayak Fishing Classics Tournament Trail, and that's on our website. It's all digital. And each fall, it has a shopper's guide in it, what you and I would call a gear guide. But this is designed for the shopper, so your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend, they don't know exactly what to get you for Christmas. They get in our magazine, and they say, oh, yeah, here's this pole, here's that reel, here's whatever you need, and you click it, and you're on that manufacturer's online site you can purchase. So the magazine has that in it, as well as all kinds of really good features, we feel, in the good articles. We've got about 30 sponsors in all. Most of them are sponsors for gear, and we've worked real hard to do that, to provide everybody with some really top gear. Of course, Diablo Paddle Sports is our kayak sponsor, and they're incredible boats. Ocean Waves sunglasses. I know a lot of guys wear a lot of different brands. Ocean Waves has 30 different layers lenses, and each layer does something. There's no coated lenses on it. It's a specific layer designed to do a specific job, and then they're laminated together. I couldn't believe it, looking into the water the first time I put them on. And people should know that the sponsors that we have, we purchase all this gear, test it, and if we like it and we feel that it's good product and it'll really serve our contestants, then we approach the manufacturer and invite them to become a sponsor.
Boondoggle.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry about that. I was trying
okay.
to move something around and I accidentally hit it, buddy.
No problem. Then there's River Bum Flies. They make outstanding flies, plus they purchase flies from private tires all over the world. Teeny Fly Lines, Jim Teeny Fly Lines, Dr. Slick Angler Tools are simply the best. He's a surgeon, and he didn't like the fly tying gear. That was the tools that was available, so he designed everything, and their surgical quality, they're phenomenal. Deep South Fishing Rods, High Roller Lures, they're custom-made wooden lures. DOA, everybody knows DOA, another great lineup there. River to Sea Lures is a glide bait out of the West Coast. They're incredible once you learn how to use them. Mirror Lures, Precision Pack, which is kayaking gear. Princeton Tech for your lighting. Bending Branches Paddles, Aquabound Paddles, Scotty Paddle Sports. Railblaza is out of New Zealand. They make a phenomenal camera mount. They make everything that if you've got something you need held in place on your kayak, they make it as well. Exo Fisho is our shirt sponsor. They make best fishing shirts in the world, in my opinion. Canoe Lock is a lockable strap. The lock's built in to lock your kayak into place. It has two stainless steel cables through it, so you can't cut through them. We tried it before we invited them, and I had this great big old man bolt cutter that I could do anything to it. Suspends kayak storage, Plano guide series boxes. Sea Tug is a kayak trolley, squoosh kayak seats, mangrove sun gloves. Those gloves are really cool because they're thin, they're not hot, they protect you from the sun, and you can paddle in them. I haven't been able to wear mine out, but you'd look at them and you think, man, they're too thin to paddle in, but they're great. And then there's the JLM designs for the kayak covers, Reddington Fly reels, Bass Yaks. There's Real Dreams Fish Prints, Steve Whitlock, Game Fish Art, Wildlife from Scratch, and Coke Attack, which is our newest sponsor, and they make some incredible footwear. You can't even tell you've got them on, and they really protect you a lot. So that's the basic lineup of the sponsors. I don't think I forgot anybody. I hope not. I think I named everyone. People should know what's there, and it's everything that's on our website, all of our sponsors. We get the gear, we test it, and we have people sending us gear, inviting themselves into the series, and it's got to pass the mustard. And if it doesn't, we're not going to put it out there for our contestants to win.
That's awesome. That's a testament to what you do, man. It's a testament to what your tournament series is all about, and everybody who fishes kayak tournaments should appreciate that, or people who just kayak fish in general should appreciate the fact that you do your due diligence and don't just take on anybody just to be a sponsor of your events. That's really cool.
I appreciate that very much. And check out our magazine. It's right there towards the top of the menu board. I think you guys will like it. If somebody has any ideas that they'd like to see shared in the magazine, please, you know, let us know. You can contact us right from our website and ask us your questions, say what you have to say, and because we do listen. And we changed our scoring system for 2012 based on what the kayak anglers, the contestants, had said to us over the past year. So we listen to you guys, and we're always up for that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it again, man, for you taking the time out of your Monday night to come on here and tell us about what's going on with your events. Awesome, man. And I seem to be having some kind of technical difficulties on my screen here. I don't see my next guy on my call list. So I just had Mark the Landing Crew Wheeler, who is our Wednesday night host, jump in here and see if he sees it.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on.
Well,
but
I'll let you get on to your next guy. I appreciate you having me on, and we're looking forward to being over there. We're really excited about it. We'll keep you up today.
I appreciate it, Captain Pat. Again, thanks for being on the show. And one more time, the website. Give it to us again.
KayakFishingClassics.com.
Very cool. All right, Pat, have a good night, man.
All right, you too. Good fishing.
Take it easy, buddy. Awesome. Look at that. I don't know what in the world happened with that. That's awesome. I just I hit hold, and now I've got four callers in queue. Wow, that was weird. I think I got you, Mike.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I had some technical difficulties on my end too.
Oh man. So for those that are listening, and are in the chat room, and those that'll be listening on the podcast, this is Mike, a bonefish junkie, who to me lives the dream, man. He lives over in the Bahamas, the beautiful island of Nassau, and gets to chase around the gray ghost all the time. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on over there in the islands, man.
Well, Chuck, I just really enjoyed listening to Pat and all he had to talk about kayak fishing. One of the things that we're gonna work on promoting over here is some kayak fishing with the guides in different parts of the Bahamas. Living in Nassau, it's easy to navigate and travel from one island to another. You can either go by mailboat, which is a courier service that runs from Nassau to the Family Islands, and then you have other boats that make the trip as well. What's interesting about the kayak is we can throw a kayak on the mailboat or on one of the other freighters. It takes about 4 hours to get, you know, within, you know, 60, 80 miles, you can get down to Eleuthera, Long Island, Cat Island, you know, in a day's travel. So for a bone fisherman that to the Bahamas to fish, it's a nice setup to be able to take a kayak and go from one island to the other and then the do-it-yourself fishing at either at a lodge or not at a lodge. And it's easy to get around a lot of the family islands with a simple rental car.
I know we talked about the possibilities of chasing bonefish from a kayak with fly gear. Do you think it would be possible to chase the same bonefish out of a kayak with spinning gear in the Bahamas? And if you were to chase bonefish, I know it's like almost anti everything that most of us fly fishermen would believe in doing for a bonefish, but if, let's just say, you had to pick up a spinner reel and throw at a bonefish out of a kayak, what would you would you have a certain thing you'd throw at them besides some sort of a natural bait? Do you have a jig or a lure that you would use for them? The reason why I ask is Steve Chapman from Fishing Forward Radio and the guys from Fishing Forward are going to be on their way over to Abaco this week. So, at some point this week, and I don't think Steve is bringing a fly rod, and the fish for bonefish in the Bahamas without a fly rod, to me, is, well, it goes against everything that I believe in. So, if you had a lure or something of choice, a jig or so to speak of choice, what would it be?
Well, you know, Chuck, spinning rods for years were the choice of a lot of Bahamians if they wanted to catch bonefish. Most Bahamians won't even know what a fly rod is unless you get into areas where you have guides that are out bonefishing. But if your buddy's coming over to Abaco and he wants to do some bonefishing with a spinner rod, that's not unusual completely, I should say. I don't personally do it, but Anything that would resemble a shrimp, or a little crab, and he should be successful. I'd probably fish with maybe even a 10 or 12 pound leader, monofilament leader, and that's all he needs. And he should have a good day. Again, you're still sight fishing. You know, you're still casting essentially the same bait out to a bonefish. The only problem is, in order to get any distance on a cast, obviously, that's why we fly fish. If he's going to use a spinner rod, he's going to have some weight. Of course, when that weight hits the water, it's going to spook the fish. Bonefish in the Bahamas are spooky. They get a lot of pressure, and they're skittish fish to begin with. But just a little bit of weight, you know, on a light line, and as long as he can get out around 60, 80 feet ahead of him, he should be okay.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's get back to kayak, and I just had a sorry about that. I had to get that answer for Steve.
Yeah, no problem.
He, as soon as he heard that I was going to have you on as a guest, he's like, ooh, ask this question. I was like, all right, buddy. But so kayak fishing over in the Bahamas, what, especially in and around Nassau, is there deep water to be had close to the bank?
I mean, there's some deep water, but, you know, most of the bone fishing that we do here would be in the flats, in the marshes, that's over in Abacos, in Marsh Harbor. You know, you're fishing in the marshes there. You're fishing in the mangroves. But most of the fly fishing you're going to do for bonefish in the Bahamas is going to be in shallow water, anywhere from 6 inches to maybe 24 inches of water at a low tide with high tide coming in. That's typically when you're going to be fishing a bonefish over here. Anything deeper than that, you know, you're not really sight fishing the fish anymore. You know, the thing that intrigued me about the kayak is I've long had an interest in stand-up paddleboard. And then with a conversation with you as well as some other people, the kayak is starting to interest me even more than a stand-up paddleboard because of the flexibility. And there's so much more that you can do with a kayak that you can't do with a paddleboard. So I'm starting to become more intrigued now with the kayak as opposed to the paddleboard for various reasons. You know, you can carry a lot more gear. You can certainly sit down and paddle, cover more water. So there are clear advantages to a kayak over a stand-up paddleboard.
Yeah, I've got like this. When I talked to you the other day, man, I got off the phone with you. I'm sitting there on the couch. And I'm like, man, I could picture being up at the butt crack of dawn, push-pulling myself across the flat in the Bahamas looking for clear tails to cast to, as opposed to bluish-hued copper tails with spots on them. And, man, what an amazing opportunity that would be to be able to have that. Also, too, not even just for the bonefish, but to maybe even venture out and look for some bigger fish, maybe on the edge of a reef or something like that. It's such a versatile platform that I think you could do a lot over there with it.
Again, the kayak does provides more options. You know, with the kayak, like you said, you can easily get to the edge where you hit deep water. I mean, just right off of Nassau, on the north side of the island, we can leave right in the center of the island. We can leave the island and paddle out maybe a half a mile. You'll go from the flats, and within a half a mile, you'll see 150, 200 feet of water, and you're on the edge. So now you're fishing for, you know, you're fishing for grouper, you're fishing for large snapper, jacks, runners, all kinds of stuff that's out there for you to get on the edge. So the kayak does give you more of an option, more flexibility, and you can carry a lot more gear. Obviously, if you want to switch from bonefish into deep water, you can do that as well. So that's the part that, in my conversation with you especially, has caused me to think even more about this. Because I was head over heels for stand-up paddleboard. I mean, for the last year, I've been studying them pretty hard, but I've actually, in the last month, I've started to do some more research and have found different kayaks that look really interesting. And then, again, in my conversations with you, the Jackson kayak and another kayak we were talking about look like really good candidates for the type of fishing that you can do here right off the coast of Nassau.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you. And I burn a few phone calls, and there's definitely some interest there in the things that me and you have discussed. But I think that... as a whole, I think there's a very good, I think there's a very good use for them over there. And I think also, too, and something that a lot of folks don't really understand is that you can get in and out of some of these boats pretty easy. And it wouldn't be bad for even a snorkeling type platform if you wanted to go out and look for crawfish, as you guys call them over there, or conch or something. You could probably do that from the kayak as well.
No doubt, Chuck, no doubt. And, you know, we do spear a lot of crawfish over here when the season's in. And, you know, conch you can certainly get right off the beach. You know, you find a good marsh, a good grass bottom, and you're bound to find conch. You know, when crawfish season comes back in August, I mean, the boats will be everywhere. And, if you have a good launching spot that you can leave from, you can definitely cover some water. And you can get out and get on top of some crawfish in a hurry. And the other thing is, too, you know, you get into Andros and Abacos, the population of crawfish over there is pretty high. You can cover so much water in such a short amount of time, and there's not near the pressure in that area as there is, say, in Nassau. So the crawfish are far more plentiful in that area. And from a kayak, it would be ideal.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So real quick, man, tell us about you. Tell us about how you made it to the Bahamas. I mean, obviously you're not a naturally born and raised Bahamian. You can tell just by the way you talk. But tell us how you came about getting over there, and you know, give us kind of a backstory on you.
You know, Chuck, as a kid, I grew up in South Florida, and I used to come to the Bahamas a lot in the late 70s. And kind of back then, I always thought that eventually I might retire to the Bahamas. And then moved up north, lived up north in the Pennsylvania area for like 20 years, and we used to make the pilgrimage up to New York for the salmon run and catching, shooting for salmon, steelhead, and brown trout, and did that trip. You know, and over the years, had always dreamed of bone fishing. You know, it's everybody that fly fishes eventually has to get on a bonefish or a permit or a tarpon, and, you know, that was always something I wanted to do. Our kids are grown and on their own now, so my wife and I decided about 3 years ago that we were going to move down to the islands, and so we did, and we call this home. And it, you know, since we've been here, when I first got down here in the first year we moved down, I went out, I took the same rod and the same reel that I used to go out and fish for steelhead, and put a bonefish on one day, and then I was instantly a junkie. So you know, we're starting a movement. And you know, we've got their website, bonefishjunkie.com, and we're starting to market some guides and some resorts throughout the Bahamas. You know, if anyone's ever looking for a place to stay or a guide to fish with, all they got to do is hit us up. We don't take an agent fee. All we do is connect people. That's all we do is just put a client with a guide or a client with a resort or a hotel, and just to make the marriage and just turn people on to a new experience. That's what we're all about.
That's awesome, man. I gotta take my hat off to you in a day and time where everyone's out for themselves and looking to make a buck, to not try and turn a profit with that and just help out the locals is pretty awesome, man. I mean, me and you had talked for, God, I think we talked for over an hour and a half, 2 hours when we talked.
Yeah,
on the phone.
Yeah, it was a good conversation, Chuck. Yeah.
Yeah, and man, it was just that was one of the things that I brought away from the conversation about you. It was the idea that, wait a minute, so this guy sets up these multiple $1,000 trips, because they are bonefish trips to the Bahamas can be quite expensive. They don't have to
be,
but they can be. And
that's right.
And you don't ask for anything in return. You do it because you love it. You do it because you want to help to promote the locals. And man, that's awesome. That's going to pay dividends in the end for you, for sure.
And that's right, Chuck. And it's all about the guides. You know, we, of course, you know, one of the comments that, you know, you made with Pat earlier was, you know, kayak fishing has become more popular since the economy has taken a turn for the south. A lot of, in our conversation the other evening, we talked about how a lot of the guides in Florida gave up their boats and started guiding from kayaks. Well, you know, in the Bahamas, the economy here is slow too, and it's coming back, but it's slow here as well. So people have gotten creative. You know, they went from your traditional boat guided service to there are lodges now that do the DIY, the do-it-yourself bone fishing days, and you know, you'll go down, you'll stay at the lodge. And what they'll do is the guys will connect you with different areas to fish, and you're on your own. And that's a nice model, and that works well. You know, what I'm in our minds, what we want to do is help the guides as best we can to generate more business. A lot of them don't have the wherewithal in order to have a website or, you know, the technology to be able to grow their business. They live on word of mouth. So what we try to do is be word of mouth for the guides. You know, we have clients that reach out to us from all over the world, the UK, Canada, U.S., has somebody from New Zealand, from everywhere. They want to come to the Bahamas and want to chase the gray ghost. And we just make the marriage. You know, it's like, where do you want to go? You want to go North Bahamas, South Bahamas, Eleuthera? You want to go to the Abacos, Andros? You know, where do you want to go? And I marry the client with the guide. And that's what we do, is we connect them and say good luck, you know, and hope you have fun. And we're out of it. But that's what it's about, though. It's not about, you know, me making any money on it. It's about helping guides and, again, for the love of the sport and the love of the industry. And that's really what it comes down to for us.
Man, that's awesome. How often, if ever, do you make it back here to the States? Do you come back very often?
I do, actually. I get back once every couple of months or so. I make it back, and I was in Florida back in February. And then just recently we were back up north for a couple of days. But, you know, I get back once in a while. Honestly, you know, since we moved down here, I live on vacation, so I don't need to go anywhere to go on vacation. It kind of drives my wife crazy. She wants to go somewhere. But you know, I live on vacation. I work on vacation, and, you know, we go back to the States to visit family and friends.
That's awesome. That's super cool. Listen, if you ever make it back here, and you want to fish the lagoon again, because I know you went up there to do some fishing last time you were here, I think.
I did.
Yeah, if you ever want to fish the lagoon again, man, feel free to get a hold of me. I'll be more than happy to take you. And,
well, you can count on that, Chuck.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm looking forward to trying to get down there to the Bahamas probably in the next couple of months. I think we're going to be doing some filming for a show that my buddy Chris and I are planning on trying to solicit to a couple of major networks, and I've talked about it before here on the show. And one of the things that we were talking about doing, and one of the main reasons why I got a hold of you, was to see what kind of guidance you could give me, so to speak, when it came to that. And what you told me about the individuals that call the Bahamas home and have their entire lives just was the most amazing talk that I think I've ever had when it comes to visualizing an actual trip. The idea of going to an area and fishing with people who still do the same style of fishing that their ancestors did, that, you know, their forefathers did, is pretty awesome. And I guess, you know, just I don't even know how to put it all into words, man. It's the excitement that I had after our conversation about maybe trying to get down there has just grown and grown and grown. And I talked to some buddies of mine who do make quite a few trips over to the islands. They don't do any inshore fishing when they're there. They just strictly fish offshore. But, you know, from what I've heard from everybody, it's just an amazing place to go and visit and not do the whole, I don't know, tourist trappy kind of a thing, you know. Not necessarily that all of the places like the Sands or the Disney Island or any of that crap is bad or anything. I mean, different strokes for different folks. But if I were to go over there, I definitely want to live in and amongst or stay in and amongst the folks that live there and call it home. That's where you find all of the fun anyway. That's where you find the true just natural lifeblood of the islands.
Well, so, you know, since our conversation, you know, I told you I was going to make contact with a buddy of mine, Shine Green over in, is his name, and he's over in Andros, down in Mangrove Key. And, you know, when you talk about getting deep into the culture of the Bahamas and you're fishing alongside of Bahamians that have, you know, generations of people that have come up through the bone fishing industry, as well as, you know, living on an out island with limited resources. You know, they farm a lot of their own vegetables and their fruits. I mean, they fish for their meals. You know, they still have, you know, your modern, they still make their trips to Nassau to shop for other groceries, and they do have small grocery stores on, you know, in on the island they live on. But, you know, they also still have that nature about them that comes from the ancestry where they do live from the sea and the land. And in talking with Shine, actually, I spoke with him again this evening. He's excited to talk to you. And, you know, his family is generations of fishermen. And, you know, the kids sitting on the stone, you know, out on the beach, on the lava rock, you know, casting hand lines and catching snapper. Guys going out on skiffs to the edge and dropping hand lines for grouper and large snapper. You know, that's a normal day for these folks. It's a very normal day. You know, jumping on a skiff and going out for crawfish when the season's in, you know, to fill up the freezers. That's a normal day. And then you have Shine Green, who, you know, he's got a beautiful 22-foot skiff with a four-stroke Yami on the back. And I'll tell you, this thing will cover more water in less time. And you'll get on so many bonefish in a short amount of time. And at the same time, you can experience, you know, the culture of the folks that are still handlining and fishing and that are diving for conch, diving for crawfish, you know, and you can live all that experience in one day on one island in this country, and it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, well, I think you've got my blood pumping along with a bunch of other folks. I know Pepe and I are over here in the chat room, and we're kind of talking back and forth about getting kayaks over there so we can go make a trip. I'm jokingly, but not really jokingly, saying we should boondoggle over in the islands. And I think I told you about boondoggles. I got to hit my sound bite real quick, Mike. So you got to bear with me, buddy.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, all right, man. Here we go.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach, October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
See, so we're going to be doing this boondoggle, Columbus Day weekend up in Virginia Beach. And, man, how cool would it be down the road to do a boondoggle in the islands? Man, that would be so awesome.
So you're doing that up in Virginia in October then?
Yeah. Virginia Beach, Virginia, on the banks of the Chesapeake. Mm-hmm. We're going to go up there and hopefully find some big giant flatfish, some big flounder. Maybe we'll find some stripers, all kinds of fun stuff. But
It's not a far fetched idea, Chuck, to have a boondoggle in the Bahamas. It's really not. It's not as crazy an idea as you might think. It's quite realistic. You know, to get kayaks over here is a very simple thing. You just send them on a boat out of South Florida. They're very easy to ship over. So it's not a far-fetched idea by any means.
Done. Book it.
Yeah, so it's really not.
And Mike, you write a blog?
Actually, I do. And on our website, bonefishjunkie.com, you know, there's different features and different categories on our. It's a blog site, and it's starting to get a lot more pressure now, and there's a lot more activity on it. So, you know, just your listeners, just tune in, and if you guys are ever interested in making a trip to the Bahamas, by all means, man, just look us up, and we'll be glad to hook you up with a good guide in the Bahamas.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Well, listen, buddy, I'm getting down here to the nitty gritty of the show. I appreciate you coming on, Mike. And listen, please, man, feel free at any time. Call the show. It's so cool to hear from you, especially when we're getting rained on and pounded by all this wind and rain and stuff. It's nice to know that somebody's still enjoying themselves over there.
Yeah, we're good. We're a little bit drier than you are, so I know you guys are getting pounded pretty hard. But stay dry, man. Tight lines, and it's good talking to you, Chuck.
You too, buddy, man. Thank you so much, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Talk soon.
All right, buddy.
All right.
So there we go. Mike Bonefish Junkie. Dude, I'm telling you, it's I'm down. I don't know. Pepe, are you down to go down to the islands for a boondoggle, boondizzy? I see Wheeler. Wheeler's saying he's ready. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Especially if we could just throw the kayaks on a ferry and go with it. Man, that would be so cool. That would definitely be one of those boondoggles that that come rain, sleet, or snow, and hurricane, or whatever, we'd have to figure out a way to get down there. Awesome. Well, we're going to have to talk. Oh, look, Greg Crisp would for sure get the award for the farthest travel if he were to come from New Hampshire to the Bahamas. That's awesome, man. Mark, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
God, how cool would that be?
Oh, I'm already looking at the bank account and the financial funds to see how I could pull that off.
I know. I saw Pepe said something like $49 each way would get you down there. That's cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's from down south, but dude, because most guys would drive. Say they drive down to the Keys. Like, say we decided to do a Keys boondoggle. You would spend, I think, less money to drive to Fort Lauderdale, get on the ferry, take the ferry across, and come back whenever we're done, because you're only talking about $49. It'd cost you more in fuel to go from Fort Lauderdale down to the Keys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and then you got to think about, you know, especially if it's a vehicle ferry where you could take your own, you know, vehicle, just take one truck or a U-Haul for that matter, just pile everyone's gear inside of it and just take that U-Haul across, and everyone pitches in like $10, you know, just everyone crams in the cab kind of thing. You'd be golden, man.
Pepe says the ferry goes to Grand Bahama right now for $49 each way. That is killer. You need to look into it, Pepe, and see if we can put kayaks on that thing. I'm serious. I will talk to Chip. I will talk to Mark and Adam. That would probably be the cheapest, because you can go over there and just stay in a mom and pops type hotel. The only thing is that you would have to make sure that you got a room that you can put your stuff in. Like, there's no camping. Like, you don't go camping. You can camp in the Bahamas, but you wake up and half your stuff will be gone. Not saying that the normal locals around the islands would be that way, but there's a lot of pirating that goes on over in the islands, man. A lot. So it's definitely something to think about. No, that'd be cool. In fact, just to tell you a real quick story, I know some folks that went over there with a brand new yellowfin, 36-foot yellowfin with triple 300s on it. And they were there one night. They woke up the next morning to go fishing, and all three motors were gone. All three outboards were gone. And this is in the water. And if anybody knows anything about outboard motors, a 300 horsepower Yamaha is not a light engine.
That's nuts.
So for them to be able to unbolt and steal three 300s off the back of a yellowfin overnight with no one knowing, there you go.
Yeah.
That just shows you. I know folks who have went over there by boat, and their boat, just the whole boat, be stolen and then be found like off of North Carolina or something in the Gulf Stream, just completely stripped. Nothing in it. I mean, not even a steering wheel, toilet's gone, everything's gone. Just a hull. Like all of the hatches have been removed. Like literally everything is gone. Gas tanks, the pumps, everything. It's just a shell. I mean, at that point, you don't even want to see it again. Like, please don't give it back to me. Like, just shoot holes in it, set it on fire, and let it sink to the bottom or whatever. Oh, man. God, I'm telling you, let's go to the Bahamas. It would be awesome. Oh, man.
You know what the problem is going to be, though, if we do something that? Like that, right?
What?
Is that none of us are going to want to head back on the ferry home.
Oh, no. Why would you, man? Mike lives the dream. Are you kidding me? To wake up every day and look out of your house or look out your backyard or whatever and see nothing but ocean. and know that just a few hundred yards off the banks of where you're standing, you can get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I would be so fat. I know you need passports for sure. But, dude, I would be so fat. I'd be fat, dumb, and happy on just on crawfish and conch fritters, and you'd never get me to leave.
No.
You guys would have to drag me back. I don't want to go. Hammerhead's got a passport. Let's do this. We could just all
go over mine.
To his passport. Yep, mine's coming. So, oh man, God, I can't. Man, that's awesome. Even if we could only get like 20 of us together to do it, I say we try and do it, man. That would be so awesome. Oh man, maybe we can get Fish and Florida Radio involved. We can get those guys to come over and boondiggly with us too. That'd be awesome.
So is that the plan for February?
Listen, I will. Yes. Yes, I'm calling it. We're done. Book it. Look at Hammerhead says he's already in Florida, so he's got half the battle won right there.
There you go.
Oh, man. God, that is so awesome. I think we really need to talk about this. I mean, it may not be a reality for February, but it would be for me. I'm down. But
that would be the best time. We'd have to worry about hurricanes or tropical storms.
Yeah, there you go. Probably won't have to worry about bugs too much either. It'd be February.
True.
Oh,
and plus, that's the time of the year that everything from up north, you know, all the tarpon, everything are down there in mass.
Yeah. I just want to catch a couple bonefish and get out and catch some snappers and groupers off the shallow wrecks and rocks and stuff. And, God, it'd be so much fun. If you get to the right island, you paddle out, you catch a freaking tuna, dolphin, wahoo. Yeah.
And my wife's looking at me now and going, we're going. So I get the wife's permission. Woo! Already won.
There you go. In the meantime, we have this to look forward to.
Boondoggle.
Boondoggle. What the heck is a boondoggle? It's a bunch of crazy kayakers getting together in Virginia Beach October 5th through 8th. For more information, check out yakangler.com, the ultimate resource for kayak fishermen.
Looking for a group of kayak anglers to share your kayak fishing adventures with? Check out yakangler.com, your ultimate fishing resource.
And of course, yakangler.com, Mark and Adam, those guys partnered up with us here here at Kayak Fishing Radio to put on these boondoggles. And if you guys are listening to the podcast and don't know what in the world we're talking about, even though Steve Chapman just explained it, come on out to Virginia Beach, man. If you can get some vacation time and make it up there, it'd be well worth your efforts. We're going to fish with some amazing people, some guys who are truly legends in the sport. And I'm going to tie myself off to kayak Kevin Whitley and have him drag me around for the first day, I think, and fish near Rob Choi and Wheeler and Lozier and all the guys that, you know, you read about in the blogs and you see on TV and, you know, you hear about and stuff. So it should be a great time, man. It should be a great time. And we really encourage everybody to come on out and spend time with us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Plus, I got Tito's Vodka to donate vodka for the boondoggle. How awesome is that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tito's Vodka is the official vodka of the boondoggle in Virginia Beach. Not necessarily saying that everyone who shows up has to drink Tito's vodka, but it will be readily available for those who wish to partake in an adult beverage. I will be checking IDs. No, I'm kidding. So it should be a whole lot of fun, man. God, I just can't wait. All I have to say is flounder.
Oh, dude, the numbers of flounder we've been catching lately and the size have just been awesome, dude. Absolutely.
Are they gonna be there in October, buddy? Don't lie to me.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you. If it's the way my logs are the past 4 years, or 3 years it should be, the springtime has always been okay, but October, or the end of September into October, have been dynamite. We're talking
8-10 pounders pulled on the docks on the boats that go after Spot and Croaker readily.
That's what I'm talking about.
They go on that fat feed last time, right before they leave the bay. You know, when all the Spot, the Croaker, and everything come down from, you know, Maryland and Delaware and up north, they sit there in the bay and they just chew them up and they book it out.
That's what I'm talking about.
That happens right around the end of October.
Cool. We'll make it happen. My wife and I love flounder. We need some flatties, and some fatty flatties will be whoever puts me and my wife on doormats, I will give you a free fishing trip with me. You know, you guys all get free fishing trips with me anyway, but no, I'll think of something. I'll bring something up there to give away. Somebody will get a prize. Whoever it is that points my wife and I in the right direction to get a couple of doormats will get hooked up. That's all I got to say. Because that's my wife's favorite, one of her favorite fish to catch is a flounder. And one of my favorite fish to eat is a flounder. And I love catching them, stupid, ugly bastards. So, cool. Looking forward to it. Well, I got 2 minutes and 25 seconds left on the show. Per the little lady in my ear, and I appreciate everybody being on in the chat room, listening in live, and those of you that are going to hear this on a podcast, man, thank you so much for the support that you always show all of the shows here on Kayak Fishing Radio, and looking forward to ICAST. Can't wait, ICAST in less than what I got 2 weeks about till ICAST comes. It's going to be so much fun. I know my boy Pepe's going to be there. We're going to hang out and talk. And he's in some booth from some company. I've never heard of him before. It's crazy, but it'll be fun. Stop by and see Pepe. He'll be in the what's that kayak company called again? Oh, that's right, Diablo. My bad. No, I'm kidding. He'll be in the Diablo Paddle Sports booth, and stop by and say hello to him. If you guys are making it down here for that, I will not be in a booth per se. Well, I will be in a lot of booths, but I am not going to be in a single booth. I'm going to be wandering around aimlessly like a lost homeless person looking at all of the awesome stuff. I'll be down there with the guys from YakAngler.com. So if you see us walking around with our YakAngler.com little badges, or if you see a bunch of dudes that look like they're escorting a small person around. Oh, wait, that's right. Adam can't make it.
Oh! Oh, it sucks.
Yeah. Adam.
Oh, then I'm not even going to say that.
Listen, no. Listen. 90 seconds. Congratulations to Adam and his lovely wife. They are expecting their first child, a girl, to the family, and that is why Adam will not be attending ICAST.
True.
Because I believe his wife will be giving birth to this beautiful baby girl sometime right after ICAST. So probably not a good idea for him to travel to Florida. But
yeah.
Cool. Listen, awesome, everybody. Appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for being here. And to all of my sponsors, Jackson Kayaks, Yeti Coolers, Bending Branches, Paddles, Tackle Webs, YakAngler.com, Bloody Decks, appreciate all the support you guys show me. And check out Space Coast Kayak Anglers on Facebook, and also, too, on YakAngler.com. Be my friend on Facebook, Chuck's Kayak Adventures, or just Chuck Levi, Charles Levi Jr., whatever. See ya. Good night, Trey and Logan. See ya. Good night, tight lines, take a kid fishing.